several hundred million dollars, and I'm busted, and I'm putting a dollar in there, and I get resentful. It never occurred to me to go sit somewhere else, so I could never see him put that dang quarter in there. And one night, I was in a bad place anyway, and I put that dollar in there, and he put that quarter in there, and I wanted to hit him. And after the meeting was over with, my sponsor called me. And this is the reason. Good sponsors, they look in our eyes and shake our hands. It tells them a lot about us. And my eyes were wild, and he looked at me and, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "That no good, sorry son of a gun. He's one of your business partners. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars." And I put a dollar in there, and he put a quarter in there. My sponsor looked at me and said, "David, where did you get that dollar you put in the basket tonight?" I looked up at him, and I said, "I wrote another hot check." He said, "David, AA doesn't want that kind of money, and AA doesn't need that kind of money. And furthermore, if you live to be 290 years old, you'll never be able to help the amount of people that that particular member has helped anonymously." In AA and out of AA. And I said, "Yes, sir." Yeah. And so the first members of AA, you know, it seemed to them they needed more outside help than the modest gifts that were coming in. And their plans called for, you know, big shot ideas of philanthropy. But I guess perhaps the most influential non-alcoholic that Alcoholics Anonymous has ever experienced, a non-alcoholic who loved AA as much as life itself, John D. Rockefeller, Jr. And he said, "You know, I'm afraid money's going to spoil this thing." And a few AAs had already reached the same conclusion. And gradually the minority became the majority, as our experience has shown us, that our members ourselves can provide enough to finance AA's proper aim. I have never yet seen an AA group and go to a lot of meetings. If the till gets a little short, and the secretary or treasury gets up and say, "We're a little short on rent," if you can feel in your heart to put in a few more pennies or a few more of this, I've never seen it yet. We always come, if we're properly informed, for what we really need to be done, you know? In the simplest application, Tradition 7 is easily understood when we hear about a new AA group being started with funds from a federal grant. Our quick reaction is, "Well, somebody goofed." But then we come to the borderline cases. Groups that put on a raffle for the benefit of their central office and invite the general public to contribute and buy tickets, or have weekly bingo parties and invite the general public to come and participate, have dances and charge and invite the general public to participate. These projects would be routine for any other society, but for us, such action simply means that we've got our hands out again asking non-members for money. Because, you know, there was a group out in West Texas, a pretty good-sized group, and six of its members all of a sudden decided they didn't like the group, they didn't like the kind of people that were coming there, and so they decided they're going to go form their own group. And they just knew that everybody they were sponsoring is going to follow them. So they went out and they rented a house. Now, drunks, this don't go by one or two tables and maybe 15 or 20 chairs. They bought 30 tables and they bought 100 chairs, just knowing that the first meeting that's going to be full. 9 months later, the six same members were meeting there three times a week, and never occurred to them to go get drunks. They were waiting for them to come to them. Well, they're going busted and they're all out of money. And they're behind in the rent, so they said, "Well, after the Saturday night meeting, why don't we play bingo? And we'll send out these flyers, and we'll go ahead and we'll give cash prize money." Well, they sent out the flyers, and they're so broke, they found some secondhand bingo cards at a rummage sale, and then they have to flip kind. They went out and got some old dried beans at the grocery store to cover the numbers, and they were going to call them out by slips out of a hat. And they sent it out. The meeting was over with at 9. That Saturday night, before the meeting was over with, people started flooding that place, going to give away cash for money. And the next week, they couldn't even finish the meeting, so they dropped the meeting back to 7 o'clock and going to go play bingo at 9:30. And they were still coming in. And my God, every time they played, every chair was full. They had them on the floor and everything else. And they began to collect in some money. And so they decided, well, why not play bingo twice a week? We'll forget about the Thursday night meeting and only have the Tuesday night meeting. Well, them old six old boys, they were making so much money, the next thing you know, they're driving new pickups. And they got rid of them old worn-out cowboy boots. Got to wearing them chains around their neck, letting their hair grow a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the next thing you know, and they were doing pretty good. Well, there was a one-legged drunk that just got out of the insane asylum, the drunk ward, in a town close by. Didn't have a place to live. So they built him a little bedroom with a hot plate and fixed it so he could take a shower. He's going to be kind of the caretaker. Well, he's in there hobbling around on that one leg, and a long limousine drove up. Three well-dressed men came out. They walked in and said, "We won't see the manager." He said, "Well, I'm not the manager. I'm a caretaker. Look, he's got a nice place. We understand you got a nice cash business. Do you have insurance?" "Well, what do you mean?" "Well, you know, catastrophe insurance. Tornado insurance." And that old drunk looked him in the eye with all the sincerity, and he said, "This is AA. God protects us." They said, "Is that your answer?" "Mm-hmm." Well, three nights later, the roof blew off. Well, drunks ain't no fools, you know. One's good, two's better. They not only put the roof on, they added another wall and got some more chairs and got some more tables. And meanwhile, business was so good, they got a bunch of new drunks to help that old boy. And the business got better. They bought him a false leg and made him a full bedroom with a full kitchen facility. And they're rolling in money. Well, a long limousine drove up. Some men got out. Talked to him again. "Is God still your protector?" "You bet. God's our protector." "Is that your answer?" "Yes." Well, about a week later, the roof and the back wall blew off. Well, one's good, two's better. Three's terrific. And by this time, they had so much money. They went out in the country, they bought some land, laid a concrete reinforced steel slab floor that a DC-10 could land on. Got one of them new Butler steel buildings and dropped the ceiling, lowered it, and they had room for 2,500 people. And they put these electronic bingo boards all around so you wouldn't get a crick in your neck. They had Atari machines. They put in a full-line cafeteria. They had dances. They had style shows. They had everything in this God's world in there. And they were doing so good, they just knocked off the Tuesday night meeting, and they didn't have a regular AA meeting. But if you wanted to come out and talk AA, you could come out at noon, and they had a little small room with a coffee pot and a table and some chairs, and you could talk about it. And they were rolling in the money. Well, they had three more visitors. They asked them the same question, got the same answer. This time, when it blew concrete slab floor, bingo balls, boards, tables, cards, roof, all into New Mexico. Now, when you use explosives in this country and not apply for a permit, legal, you incur the wrath of the meanest federal agency that there is in the United States government. And that's the Secret Service, or the Treasury Boys. They're the ones that guard the current president of the United States and farmer and their families. And one of their units is the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearm Bunch. And if you think the CIA and the FBI is ugly, you don't know what ugly is until you have dealings with the Treasury Boys. And I couldn't tell you this unless I hadn't experienced it in my own life. Well, it got on television, it got on the radio, it got everywhere in this God's world. And one day, one of the staff secretaries of General Service Office called me and said, "What's this about an A group being dynamite?" I said, "This is the third time." She said, "My God, we have reporters in here from every one of the major television networks, from the public television, all the radio networks, including the public radio network, about A groups being dynamited." I said, why you call me? "Why don't you call the ones out there in West Texas? They'll tell you about it." Well, the group, it got into a lot of bad publicity. Some were indicted. Many members of AA spent many hours in court. Pictures all over the paper and everything, yeah. And as a result, The group saw the error of its ways and decided that they're going to start all over again as an AA group. And that was 11 years ago. Last year, the group voted to resume bingo again. Our kind learned very, very hard and very, very slow, very slow. There's another group talking about a shortfall. And the income from the basket never could catch up with the expenses. So it was in a two-story house, and they got the brilliant idea about raising money. They had this big empty room up there and said, we'll start a 24-hour poker game. And we'll get members of AA to sit there and take a part of the cut and then send it down to the secretary to make up the shortfall. Well, that was the most popular room in the whole doggone place. But they had one problem. If you left the room, your seat was vacant, and they always had a bunch of them sweating the poker game. They had another problem. If you had to go to the women's or men's room, you had to leave the room, which meant somebody's going to take their seat. Drunks ain't no fools. They just made their own laboratory arrangements. They just simply opened up the windows. Well, the neighbors start getting a little angry. Trees started turning yellow. The odor wasn't too nice. And they waited until they had one of these business meetings. You know? You know how it is when you come to an AA group, you come in there and you get there 15 minutes early, it's hardly nobody there. But when you finish the meeting, you look around, my God, they got them all around the room. Well, they come in, it is in a residential neighborhood, and they come in, they're serving free food. Now, you want to get the drunks to your meeting, just tell them it's free. And free food. And here they come at the last minute. Well, while they're in the meeting, we had a tremendous rainstorm. And this particular city, the largest in Texas, is close to the Gulf Coast. And the raindrops are as huge as silver dollars sometimes. Honest to God, they're big. And it just flooded the place. Well, when the meeting was over with, they went to go get their pickups and their cars, and they parked in people's yards and lawns and flower beds, and they had to get wreckers to pull them out and tore up everything, and the neighbors got mad, so they waited until they had another one, and then they called the police and they raided them. Well, they took everybody and all the money and all the cards out of the poker room, and then they had a regular AA meeting going on downstairs. They just gathered them up and took the whole bunch down to the jail. Well, there's always some lawyers getting sober in AA. And a couple of them were in this crew, and they said, we'd like to talk to the night judge. And they did and said, look, this is just penny ante poker. What do you want them out on the streets gambling? We promise you, if you'll just forget about it, we promise you that they'll never do it again. And right there and then, that judge should have known they're going to do it again. Never do it again. Yeah. Again. Well, they remained quiet for a while. And then they had the state AA convention in that town. And Sunday morning, when everybody went to go hear the final spiritual speaker on Sunday morning, they're on the front page of that Sunday edition of that newspaper and type the size of Japan bombs Pearl Harbor were these words. AA group dynamited because of gambling. And Texas Rangers. Well, now let's go back to something. You got you a drunk that's been out in any of these gambler casinos, no matter what part of the country. Has been drinking for years. Come and ain't got no place to go, so he comes back to mama. Mama's got him in the back room. He done hocked mama's grandmother rings, everything else he could get his hands on to drink. He's been out gambling, lost a lot of money. He's been to treatment, been to jail. Somebody says, well, he hadn't been to Alcoholics Anonymous. Why don't we crawl Alcoholics Anonymous? Let's dial Alcoholics Anonymous. And right when you get ready to dial Alcoholics Anonymous, in comes one of those nosy neighbors. Well, how's that old sorry drunk doing in the back room? Well, we think maybe we found a solution for him. We're getting ready to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And the neighbor says, wait a minute, I'll be right back. And goes home and gets the front page of that edition, that Sunday paper, where it says, Texas Rangers raid AA group for gambling. If you had a drunk that's been drinking and been gambling, and you see that, would you call Alcoholics Anonymous? The answer is rather obvious. This is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, as a result, I tell you, I could talk for days about groups getting involved with it under the guise of raising money for the group and building funds and hiding money and all this other kind of stuff, you know? So, money may pose a different problem. If a group treasury grows too fat beyond a sensible reserve, well, most groups are not going to have that happen unless they're extremely large or unless they're rat-holing money. But there is one simple solution that strengthens our unity and advances our purpose and gives the access to AA activities and services. So when our trustees declare for the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was finally and firmly embedded in AA's tradition. Now when newspaper and other news media got hold of these facts, there was an immediate and profound reaction. To people who are familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, A presented a very strange thing. Approving editorials both in this country and abroad generated a great new wave of confidence and respect in what? In the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our principles are totally 100% perfect with integrity. Because the news media pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible by making financial independence part of its traditions. But of course, now we don't have to ask. As I said, AA is now high on the worthy cause list of our members. Our General Service Officer Group politely turned down many unsolicited gifts and bequests. There are hundreds of thousands of dollars that are laying in escrow that AA that have been willed to AA by non-alcoholics that AA will not take it. It doesn't even draw interest. They cannot take it because it doesn't come from our members, period. Handsome gifts may have strings attached. There's even a limit on the amount that one can give to Alcoholics Anonymous and leave in their wills when they pass on. That's $1,000. Or contribute that annually while they're living. But it's only a one-shot deal if it's in a will. It's not perpetuating. And it has to be given in the year in which the will is probated. So that reasons none of us can buy influence or our sobriety name, no matter how rich we are. And you'd be surprised. You would think that there would be a lot of money left today, don't you? Not by our members. In proportion, very, very little. That bulk of that big money comes from non-alcoholics who are appreciative of the fact that either one of the blood kin or mostly attached passed away sober in AA as a result of AA. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Now, spiritual as it is, AA remains very much on this of this real world. The 8th tradition, like the 7th tradition, focuses on that vulgar five-letter word that's not mentioned in either tradition, and that word is money. How many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I'm not a social worker. I do not get paid for talking with you or staying with you while you shake out a drunk. And for those of you who are new in AA within the last 5 or 6 or 7 years, and you have never had that wonderful opportunity to sit with a drunk all night long and help them shake out a drunk, the first chance you get, you go. You go. You leave there with a sort of a feeling that, whew, it's only by God's grace that here I am sober. And it's but for God's grace the sobriety of alcoholics, not that drunk is drinking. And folks, you want to keep it simple? The whole key is to get from the but to the by. That's it. And there's a feeling that, well, you can't describe it unless you get your feet wet with one of these deals, I'll tell you. And because it's one of the best ways to stay sober for ourselves. However, this does not mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered any AA's mind. Now, in our lean years, Our co-founder, Bill, did think of becoming a lay therapist to earn money through his experience in helping alcoholics. We're with a strong push from the group Conscience, and Bill came to the group and he said, "Boys, Colonel Towns wants me to go work for him and help Dr. Silkworth with the drunks." And the drunks looked at him, "But Bill, you're the head horse. None of us are working. We're all broke. And the first chance we're going to do, we're going to do the same thing. And then pretty soon there won't be any a group. What's going to happen to the drunk that's looking for us?" And they just walked away from him. So it became clear from the group Conscience that Bill realized that he could never hang out a shingle reading Bill W., AA faith healer, at $10 an hour. So it became clear to the early members of AA that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying a message to somebody else person to person, face to face. You say, "Well, what about the member of AA who works in a treatment facility? Are they carrying AA message?" No. They are carrying the message of that particular treatment facility, which is not Alcoholics Anonymous. But new questions arose as our membership grew, and the word of hope spread, sending thousands of alcoholics in search of AA. And the first central offices and intergroups were usually manned by AA volunteers. But now such offices are so busy that full-time employees are needed as well. Naturally, AAs are better suited to such jobs than non-members, but then are these members of AA for doing 12-step work? No. In the office, they're just paving the way for this drunk, arranging to get a drunk, sick drunk, maybe into a hospital or treatment modality, telling a shaky newcomer where their nearest meeting is. They're helping to make it possible for that alcoholic to hear the message, one alcoholic talking to another, person to person, eyeball to eyeball. A similar development now has taken place in our fellowship's headquarters. Once a very, very tiny office with our co-founder and one secretary, it has grown in the present General Service Office, fully staffed with a huge mail room, keeping the lines of communication open throughout worldwide. The employers are both alcoholic and non-alcoholic. I don't know how many of you realize that Box 459, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 101C63, is one of the most prolific post office boxes in the entire world. And the volume of millions and millions and millions of big books are our book material, our pamphlets, letters, correspondence, everything in this God's world. The employers, as I said, and the employers are paid on a scale comparative to that of any profit-making business so that the office force can function dependably. And if they don't, they fire them. That's how simple it is. In these office jobs and other assignments, members are actually paid for their business and professional skills. Working in our General Service Office desk on conference-approved materials, literature, and pamphlets, or on the grapevines, these AAs use their skills and abilities, correspondents, managers, writers, editors, artists, proofreaders, as well as understanding of AA from both the inside and out. On occasion, volunteers are given their time, and we use volunteers in our General Service Office, and particularly in translations. It's very difficult to translate the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous into another foreign language without dropping out the context. You can take the big book as it is printed in English now and change the comma and change the period, and you have changed the entire context of that paragraph, that page, that whole chapter sometimes. Yeah. And to give you an example, the reason that we use volunteers is because they got a letter one time, and just this is the most specific experience. They got a letter one time from a drunk alcoholic in Italy. And he was laying there in Venice, right one of them canals. And he's literally emptying out his insides in that canal. Just throwing up. And he hears about AA, and they didn't have that there, so he gets somebody to write a letter, address it, and he wrote it in Italian. And they sent it to our General Service Office. Well, they didn't have anybody on the staff that could interpret it. So they turned it over to a member of AA who was head of the Italian Foreign Language Department at one of the prestigious universities there in the New York area. And being college and educated, university educated, he doesn't speak street language. So he writes back to him, "I understand exactly how you feel. And they've got a copy of this correspondence. It's funny. And he said, I understand. When I got drunk, steam came out of my eyes. My ears were ringing. You know? And I emptied my stomach. And the drunk over there looked at that. What kind of idiot is this? What kind of idiot is this? So he writes back again. This time, they turned it over to one of them street-talking Italians that are members of AA. That's raised on the street. Now, this is the only time I'll use this word. Not that I have an aversion to it. But it's the only word in the English language. There's not another word like it. And that's the word puke. Puking ain't throwing up. Puking is puke. And he writes back, he says, I understand, he writes back this one over and says, I understand exactly how you feel. I could puke and throw up straight up in the air and not get a drop on the toes of my shoes. And that old drunk over got that letter and he said, now somebody understands me. He was one of the first sober native Italians in Italy. As a result of that correspondence, period. As a result of the, and that, there's stories like that all the time, you know. And, you know, as a result of it, because that's when we use volunteers, and sometimes we can't do that, we go to the United Nations and get interpreters. And, now take our literature. Please take our literature. You don't realize the process that it goes through. For 4 years, I had a tremendous experience. I was fortunate. I was your delegate when I was a trustee on the General Service Board, trustee at large USA, to be the delegate to the World Service Meeting for 4 years. In two of those 4 years, I was chairperson of the translation, copyright, reprint of all of our material worldwide of that committee. And you learn a lot. It took 12 years just to get a good printing translation in German. Because why? There are five definitions of spiritual in the German dictionary, and to find the one that everybody is comfortable with took 10 years. If there's anyone here you know of in your vicinity who speaks and reads Thai, it's desperately needed for translation. Do you know what the fastest spreading group of people in the United States with a horrendous alcoholism problem? It's not the Hispanic. It's not black. It's not the Puerto Rican. Koreans. Where they live 10 and 12 in a three-room house with a tremendous and horrendous active alcoholism problem. The Vietnamese are another one. Oh, my God. And it's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. In Japan, they're just breaking now the female barrier because of their belief that a drunken woman is the most disgraceful thing in the world. I remember when I was growing up. As a little kid, and a drunken woman would stumble down the street. And God forbid she be pregnant. My mama would say, close your eyes. Don't look at that. Don't look at that. Because I was raised in the days to where motherhood and sisters and women were put up on a pedestal. And we respected them. Yeah, and I still do. I still do. I've never understood why they call it the Al-Anon ladies and the alcoholic woman. To me, they're all ladies, period. Some got their train turned around a little backwards, but that's okay. That's all right. And so as a result of it, you don't realize. You take our literature. This is the most popular piece of literature we've got in AA. What happened to Joe? And we believe that the reason it's so popular is because it appeals to the average intelligence of our members, comic book style. And so Lewis R., who was the first delegate to the General Service Congress, who had to be black in color, and they're getting ready to put it out, and Bill, our co-founder Bill, and Lewis were friends, and he said, Lewis, we're getting ready to put out this pamphlet, and we're going to have six faces at the bar, and one of the faces is going to be black. What do you think about that? And Lewis said, fine, as long as it's not mine. And so this goes to the artists and the illustrators, and they always print the cover for the dude, the guts. And everybody was waiting for this to come out because this is going to be a milestone in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can assure you. It's going to be a milestone. Well, everybody waited for it. When it come out, guess what? That black face was blue serge black. And the few blacks looked at it and said, oh, my God, it'll offend the mulatto. It'll offend the chocolate one. Send it back and have it lightened up. So they sent it back to the artist and the illustrator. Everybody waited. He came back, and guess what? It looked like a Chicano. And I don't know if any of y'all are familiar, have been in areas where Chicanos and blacks live together. It's like World War IX, I don't mind telling you. They sent it back and darkened it up. So it went back again to the artist and the illustrator. Came back, and this is the way it came out. Not too light, not too dark, just right. And this particular piece of literature has brought more in black and color outside of the United States and North America and all over the world than any of our literature that we've ever published. And they changed it up. Now all they did was just, here's the new one. And they changed the hairstyles. And then the gals got all exercised when they had the women's liberation meeting. And they said, why is it only men all the time? So they put one out. In other words, it happened to Alice. So that covers all the bases. And so now, wait a minute. It took 2 whole years just to get that face right. Because that is very, very careful. It wants this to be a comfortable situation. Now, wait a minute. Some old-timer may interrupt. What's going on here? Didn't Dr. Bob say, let's keep it simple? That's the precise reason. Our conference-approved literature expresses the simplicity of our fellowship. Unfortunately, too many of our group AA literature racks are cluttered up with non-AA literature, and this is what I believe Dr. Bob meant when he said, let's keep it simple, and let's don't louse it up with Freudian concepts that appeal to the scientific mind. Tradition 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards committees directly responsible to those they serve. This particular tradition is one of the most valuable traditions that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, particularly on the group level. The words, let's keep it simple, were the last our co-founder Bill heard from his fellow co-founder of AA shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950. Aware that the word it meant our recovery program, Bill later wrote, we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. But when we get into questions of actions by groups, by areas, and AA as a whole, we find that we must, to some extent, organize to carry the AA message, or else face confusion, and confusion is not simplicity. When Tradition 9 speaks of AA as a whole, it goes to the heart of AA's experience, to the spiritual simplicity of one alcoholic saying, silently, perhaps. And perhaps saying silently, help. And another alcoholic answering, I know how you feel. We're here to help you. Such a relationship could not be organized, or could it? No. A non-member familiar with modern business procedures might examine the practice of our sponsorship and see it as a haphazard operation. That's the reason that it works, because it's haphazard. You can't work with two people the same way. We develop our own experience, because there's no two people absolutely alike in this world. If there were, one would be useless. I don't know about you, but everyone I work with, I learn something new all the time. And you say, well, with all this modern electronic business, why don't you computerize it? Get profiles of your member. Okay. So say you got profiles of every member of your group. A new one comes in. The secretary asks them to fill out this form, the height, their weight, the color of their hair, the color of their eyes, any moles or markings or tattoos, what kind of alcohol they drank, how long they drank, how old they were, their weight. And the drunk said, what are you going to do with this? Well, we've got a profile on every one of our members, and we're going to take this down and we're going to put it in the computer. And there's going to be two names come up, yours and the one that matches your profile in the group, and that's going to be your sponsor. Now, that sounds logical and practical under today's modern electronics, except one thing. The name that could come up to be the new one's sponsor could be drunk. If there's one thing that we'll never be able to do, and that is to computerize the language of the heart. Because that's an inside job. Period. Period. It has to come with feeling from within. And so, that's what you call trying to organize it. But in Actions by Group, we find that we need to some degree of organization. Now, if everyone in the group thinks somebody else is going to make the coffee, turn on the lights, get everything ready, get up the program, what's the result? No coffee, no answering the phone, no programs. So in order to avoid such a disaster, one or more members agrees to be responsible for preparing refreshments for the meeting, and all the way from coffee brewers to our trustees on our General Service Board, those of us who take part in AA's service responsibilities, we are assuming responsibility, not taking on authority. And here's where Tradition 2 and Tradition 9 interlock. In the average business corporation, the board has final power to determine company's plans and policies, not our board. It serves only in a custodial capacity. And therefore, they have no power or authority to do anything other than tell you what's going on. And so outside businesses have borrowed a lot of our principles. We've borrowed their principles. And as a result, but Tradition 9, as I said, for the group level, is responsible only to those who they serve. Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name I'll never be drawn into public controversy. Now, we think the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon Tradition 10. AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. Now, since AA has begun, AA has never been divided by a major controversial issue. As hard as some of our members try to split us, our program and principles are too tough. By some deep instinct, we have known from the very beginning that no matter whatever the provocation, we must never publicly take sides as AAs in any fight, even a worthy one. But we must remember, however, that this reluctance to fight one another and anybody else is not counted on as a special virtue which makes us feel superior to other people. Nor does it mean that members of AA who have been restored or are being restored and will be restored as citizens of this world are going to back away from their individual responsibility to act as they see the right upon issues of our time. I'm so thankful my sponsor grabbed me early and he says, David, I don't ever want to read your name in the newspaper endorsing a political candidate if and when you get your franchise to vote again or any doggone thing else in this world and put the two words Alcoholics Anonymous on the name. I don't ever want to see it. And when my sponsor told me that, I know what he meant. I knew exactly what he meant. Yeah, don't do it. He says, you're not going to ride on the fineness of the two words Alcoholics Anonymous. Period. Period. And I don't want to catch you going to a bank and say, now I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I've gotten honest. That banker, I don't win. Because here is the thing. No, if you're going to go get money again, you go to work and start paying your past debts and get your credit cleared up. Then they have something viable to go by that you mean business now that you're sober. Period. And just because you're a member of AA doesn't guarantee you a doggone thing. Because it's a gift. And we've got to live it. Well, and so as a result, but when it comes to AA as a whole, that's a different matter. As an AA, we do not enter into public controversy because we know that our fellowship will, in time, weaken and perish if we do. We survive and grow and spread because we know that Alcoholics Anonymous is something of greater importance than any weight we could collectively throw back at any other cause. That's the reason why we don't get involved with MAD. We don't get involved with the National Council on Alcoholism. We don't get in for Alcoholics and Corrections and anything else. We've got our own system of which we work with strictly within the framework of our spiritual principles. Recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us, and we wish to preserve its full strength. Why? Because it's our only means of survival. Folks, This is the last house on the block. Where are we going to go? Now, the Washingtonian Society, a movement among alcoholics, was started in Baltimore over a century, three quarters ago, almost discovered the answer to alcoholism. At first, the society was composed entirely of alcoholics trying to help one another. Their membership passed the 500,000 mark in 2 years. AA got started in 1935. And in April of 67, when I got sober, 32 years later, at that time, in 1967, they estimated that there were only approximately 385,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That doesn't count the ones that got sober and passed on, but at that time, 385,000. The Washingtonians is 500,000. What happened? Now, why isn't it that AA doesn't grow so prolific? The answer is rather simple. Because AA only works for one kind of alcoholic, has, is, and will always. And that's willing to go, one that's willing to go to any and every length to obtain it and maintain it and to give it away. And that's painful, isn't it? Deflation in that depth. And that's painful. Painful. But what happened to the Washingtonians? Had they stuck to their one goal, they might have found the full answer. Here comes the reason for AA's success now. Instead, the Washingtonians permitted politicians and reformers, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, to use their society for their own personal purposes. They took violent sides in the slavery issue. Some became temperance crusaders. They got involved in the slavery issue, and within a few short years, they completely lost their effectiveness in one alcoholic talking to another. And the society collapsed. Because, you see, we're not incorporated as a legal instrument with which to attack anyone, no matter how severe the provocation. Many believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is the first recovery program fellowship for an alcoholic in the United States or in the Americas. No. They came over on the Mayflower. They're all gone by the wayside with the exception of three or four. And the largest one with its membership is 2,800 members. And it is over 100 years old. We really don't know how many members of AA we've got. Because when the sun came up all over the world this morning, God knows how many members of Alcoholics Anonymous we had. But when the sun goes down all over the world this day, many who woke up this morning as members of Alcoholics Anonymous will not be members. They went back to drinking. I'd like a floating crap game, here today and gone tomorrow. And that's just the way it is. Yeah. And so, as I said, we are not incorporated as a legal instrument with which to attack anyone, no matter how severe the provocation. We believe that continuously, since our beginning and today, AA is a fellowship and not an organization. Incorporation necessarily makes it an organization. Now, we do have two corporate entities, and that is AAWS Publishing and the AA Grapevine Incorporated, because they're incorporated with their copyright material, period. And if you don't protect your copyright, you lose it. And everybody wants to get their hooks and hands on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because the big book, other than the Holy Bible, is the largest continuing selling book in print in the world today. Period. You know why? Because it has to do with living, and it has to do with dying. But if you read that book, it's a tremendous book. With all the suffering and all the degradation, guess what? It has a lot of happy endings, doesn't it? That's what makes it such a fine book. You betcha. And so, incorporation necessarily makes it an organization. We believe that spiritual faith and a way of life cannot be incorporated. A can and will survive so long as it remains a spiritual faith and a way of life open to all men and women who suffer from alcoholism. Now, this brings us to a goodie, Tradition 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal level, personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Now, there are not but three absolutes in Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolute abstinence from alcohol. The absolute freedom for any alcoholic to become a member of AA or leave AA, and absolute anonymity on the public level. Now, you'll hear a lot of times about our anonymity statement, and they'll read at conferences at personal anonymity level, press, radio, films, and TV. The two letters TV have not been added to this tradition. For those of you who may want to know, in order to change a comma or a word or a period or to delete any words or to add any words to our 12 steps of recovery, our 12 traditions, our 12 concepts of world service, all the groups that are registered in the world have to vote on it with a minimum of 6 months' time. Now, it doesn't mean they can't be changed, but that's the way it is. And the reason that the two letters TV have not been added to that is because radio is audio and films is video. Now, the alcoholic who has and is recovering through our program is himself or herself still the strongest attraction that AA has. Our surveys show us that alcohol still rolls them in more than anything else. When people are asked what led them to seek AA's help, the answer given most often is an AA member. Our chances would have been slim if all of those in AA had remained completely in hiding. But many of us have chosen to tell our friends, our neighbors, our employers, our co-workers, our physicians, our clergymen, that we are in AA, and when we do so, we are not breaking our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition. This has to do with personal anonymity on the public level. Suppose a sick alcoholic never has the good fortune to meet an AA. How are they going to find us? His or her search will be difficult if the local group thinks it should be anonymous, too. This tradition is talking about personal anonymity. Remember, no alcoholic will be attracted to AA if he or she does not know that it exists, or if he or she has a distorted, unfavorable impression of its members or its program. Now, the showcase meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous are open meetings, open speaker meetings, conventions. And you don't know how disheartening it is when one asks their mother, their father, their grandparents, their children, their minister, physician to come to an AA meeting, and you've got someone behind the podium that mentions God once and the ugliest four-letter words at least 30 times. We get our members from out there. We don't breed them in AA. From out there. They get an unfavorable impression, of its members and its program. My little mother, who became an Al-Anon before she died, 4.5 months, she wanted to come to an AA speaker, an open meeting. And I brought her. And she got up and she said, "I'm going home." She said, "You talk like that when you was drinking, I thought maybe you'd clean it up a little bit, you bunch, after you got sober. I'm going home. I'm going home." And I didn't blame her. I didn't blame her. And after the meeting, I didn't go up and talk to the one and berate him because of his cussing. I went up to the one who asked him to come talk. And I said, "I just want you to know what happened. What happened?" Yeah. Well, I'm just talking about my own personal experiences, that's all. You have to remember, when this member of Alcoholics Anonymous is asked to share his experiences in AA's traditions, that I'm not here to tell anybody how to live traditions, how not to, or any group what to or what not to do. I'm just sharing David's own story. And I've been talking now for, I guess, about, four-some-odd hours, and I ain't used one of those words. I used to. I didn't speak English till I was 18. It was cussing before that. But the sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous cleaned me up outside, inside, tongue-side, and everywhere in this God's world that you could think about it. And they said, "If you want to associate with us, boy, you better gonna have to get with the program." And I prayed I couldn't get the program if I didn't associate with them. And so actually, you know, this tradition talking about personal anonymity. Giving the general public an accurate picture of AA is a chief job of our public information committees. They often carry the message to guarantee to certain groups, from policemen to personnel directors. Now, information about AA is being offered to the public through all communication media, in print and over the radio. It's easy to guard a member's anonymity. Of course, television, which was not in wide use when this tradition was written, that's another matter. Now, according to our conference experience, a member is breaking his or her anonymity on the public level when he or she is identified on television as an AA and their face is shown, whether or not their name is given, because it's the open face that is the anonymity violation. And yet with this media, with its vast audience, cannot be ignored. And different techniques have been employed to preserve anonymity, mask, shadow. And I'd like to talk about two personal experiences on anonymity. First one would be on radio. I was on one of those talk shows on the radio to where you got a moderator, then you've got a member of AA, a member of Al-Anon, and sometimes an Al-Ateen. And sometimes some of them, if they have small children in grade school or a little larger in middle school or high school, they won't use their first name. They'll use another one for some reason or other. I don't know why. I always just say, my name is David. I never tell them how I make a living or anything like that. And so, and they call in from all over radio land. And you get the ones that are really interested in AA. Then you get the members of AA that call in trick questions to try to fool you. Then you get the drunk that calls in. And then you get those that said, well, if you're going to talk about God, why don't you come to the church where God really is? And they're free to do that and all that. And so it was about 11:30 at night, and this little youngster is listening to the radio. And about a quarter to 12, he runs in and he wakes up his mother and says, Mama, wake up. My dentist is on the radio and he's a drunk. He recognized my voice. Well, about 2.5 weeks later, that little monster had an appointment with him. And Mama come dragging him in by the ear. And she said to me, how long have you been a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, how did you find that out? And she related the story about our little boy. At that time, I think I was 12 years sober. And she said, I just want you to know that your little patient that you're going to work on today, this was in May of that year. The previous December, she said, his grandfather passed away and he was 19 continuous years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's been my experience that as long as we're willing to follow our principles, we hear good things. Now I'm going to share another one with you. When Carter and Ford were running for president of the United States, and nobody really knew whose the president was, the country went to bed not knowing who's the president. Well, every Wednesday morning, I had to go downtown and be there by 8 o'clock, so not wanting to be a dummy, all these business and bankers, they're talking about the presidency, and I wanted to know who. And so I turn on the television set, and I go into my bathroom with a full-length mirror. And I run the hot water and I put the lather on my face. And right as I start coming down with my razor, I hear two female voices. One is a strange female voice and the other one sounds like my wife. So I stuck my head around the corner and I saw these two females on there, the moderator with her full face. That was a strange voice. But the other one was the back of her head. And I recognized my wife, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm more familiar with my wife's backside than I am her front side, I don't mind telling you. And there she was, and they're talking about me. And the moderator says to she said, the way you describe your husband, that when he was drinking, he must have been a terrible, incorrigible, nasty drinking drunk. And she said, you're being kind when you describe him in that manner. And I wanted to throw a shoe through that television set. And I'm going down there, I'm riding the freeway, and I'm hollering and screaming to everybody. And I pull in the parking lot of this hotel, and the parking attendant says, hey, saw and heard Grace on television this morning. Walked into the barber shop. There must have been 4 or 5 shine boys, 11 manicurists, 16 barbers. The place was full and two cashiers. They're all waiting for me. Hey, David, saw and heard Grace on television this morning. I think everybody in North Texas watched that television show. And I'm building up a resentment. And I leave there and I go out to my office. I call my wife and say, Grace, I saw you on television this morning. And I want to congratulate you. Because, you see, that's where Al-Anon got their traditions. We gave them to them. Ours. Same as with our 12 steps. And it is just, and also Denson, us members of AA, we're violating anonymity when we even mention that any of our blood kin are mostly attached are members of Al-Anon or Al-Anon, and vice versa. Unless they specifically state if it will help someone. Yeah. And I said, I want to tell you, you did beautiful, the shadow method, but I have a tremendous resentment. She said, what's that? I said, you didn't use your first name, Grace. But why did you have to use the first name of the woman that you accused of me getting locked up with on my last drunk? She said, that's what you call live and let live, Buster. Ha, 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 and hung up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a result of it, anonymity is a protective coat that covers the whole society. But it is more than protection. It has another dimension, a spiritual dimension, and significance, and this leads us to tradition 12. Now, you know, a lot of times, I know, you see on television, on the talk shows, and you see them moderating. Now, who do you see on the talk shows? Do you see somebody, a member of AA that's sober 45, 50 years? Who do you see? You see celebrities, don't you? In arts, sports, of that nature. Now, how many moderators have you seen? Well, now that you're a member, could you tell us a little bit about what AA is about? You never hear them talk it, do you? You know why? They don't know anything about AA. If they did, they wouldn't be busting their anonymity on the public media. And why are they there? Oh, by the way, now that you're sober, this new movie you're making, right? And they have a picture of the new book they've written. That's what you call using AA's two words, the credibility. I'm sober now. I'm viable. I'm honest. I'm straight. Buy me. Support me. And then 6 months later, you're reading the newspaper on the front page where they're drunk and going through a school zone again, or being wheeled, knocked out into a hospital somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. One of the most prolific talkers we've ever had in AA, a woman. Talked everywhere, every convention. They didn't invite her because of her message. They invited her because she was an Oscar winner on the Oscar Awards. She won two Oscars. The last Oscar she won, the next morning, they had pictures on every front page of the newspaper where she'd left that and gotten drunk and wheeled into the emergency room almost dead. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You bet. We fail to remember today that 6 inches separates a halo from a noose. Tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions. Ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Let us always remember, if we can, that anonymity is not taking credit for our own or anybody else's recovery, is humility at work. You see, if I'm going to take credit for getting a drunk sober, I have to take the full credit if they get drunk again. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is at root a very simple expression of humility. When we use our 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, we're each trying to achieve real humility, to put our self-respect on a solid base of truth rather than fantasies and fictions about ourselves. When we use our 12 traditions to work together in AA, we're all trying to achieve real humility as individual members by recognizing our true place in AA as a fellowship and by recognizing AA's true place in this world of reality. Because Tradition 1 reminds each of us that we're not recovering on our own. that we should control our personal desires and ambitions in order to guard the unity of our group and our fellowship. We ought not imagine or fancy ourselves as big shots in AA, no matter what responsibility we hold, which is nothing more tradition too. All of us are just alcoholics together, and then we're not entitled, tradition 3, to rule on the qualification of other alcoholics seeking the same help that we have had. Yes, a group needs humility too. It may make its name known public, but in the spirit of anonymity. It should see that what that group is just merely a part of the great whole. Careful in every enterprise to consider the welfare of all the other groups that make up AA. In both group and individual activities, we should remember what the full name of our fellowship is. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not Addiction Anonymous, nor is it Addicts Anonymous. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not represent any established religion, nor is it a new religion. We're not evangelists. We're not gurus. We're not temperance leaders out to save humanity. We're anonymous alcoholics trying to help other alcoholics. In the rising battle against alcoholism, we ought not let our pride in AA mislead us into linking our fellowship with other agencies in order to bid for a share of their power, their prestige, or their money. And if we keep tradition 6 and 7 in mind, we'll indeed direct all our efforts towards AA's own unique purpose. When we go on 12-step calls, or when we sit and we work with drunks, we should not tell ourselves how noble we are for doing such valuable work without pay. The meaning of 12-step work cannot be measured in money, and we have received advance pay for it in money of far greater worth, what? Our sanity and life itself. In the same tradition, it's suggested that a service center maintain AA's humility by paying its employees decent wages rather than considering AA so virtuous an outfit that employing there is a favor. You know, when you pay peanuts for wages, all you got is a bunch of monkeys working for you. When we're given special responsibilities within AA, Tradition 9 defines these as opportunities to serve, not titles to flaunt in each other's faces. The humility of our fellowship itself is safeguarded by Tradition 10, with a refusal to set ourselves up as general authorities, swinging and throwing our collective weight around in the public eye. And we do not want to sell our program as a surefire remedy in the extravagant terms of a promotional campaign or a circus, nor do we wish to dramatize it by identifying only the noted people on the outside world who happen to be members of AA, thereby implying that it has been for each of us an individual accomplishment. And Tradition 12 reminds us that we have something stronger than our own personalities to fall back on. Our principles and our come first, and they are not our own invention. They reflect eternal spiritual values. And with this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. Anonymity is the most precious principle we've got. If there's one thing that has made Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the spiritual substance of anonymity, which is love and service. For AA's 12 traditions ask us to give up our personal desires for what? The common good. And we realize that sacrificial spirit, well symbolized by anonymity, is the foundation of every one of us. It is AA's proving willingness to make these sacrifices that gives our confidence in our future. In the beginning, anonymity was not born of confidence. It was a chilling of our early fears, of our nameless groups of alcoholics who were secret societies. New prospects could find us only through a few true trusted friends. The bare hint of publicity, even for our work, shocked many of them in those days. Though ex-drinkers, they still thought they had to hide from public distrust and contempt. But as AA groups multiplied, so did anonymity problems. When our personal stories got into circulation outside of AA, the loss of confidence in our anonymity promise was very, very severe. It frequently turned people away from us. Clearly, every AA's member name and story, too, had to be confidential, if he or she wished. This was the first lesson in the practical application of anonymity. So with characteristic intemperance, however, some of our newcomers cared not at all for secrecy. They wanted to shout AA from the housetop, and did. Alcoholics barely dry, rushed bushy-eyed, tailed, and bright-eyed, buttonholed anybody who would listen to their stories. Others hurried to place themselves before microphones and cameras, and sometimes, unfortunately, they got very drunk and let the group stand with a bang. They had changed from AA members into AA show-offs. So this brought up the question squarely before us. How anonymous should an AA member be? Our growth made it plain that we could not be a secret society, but it was equally plain that we could not be a vaudeville circus either. These experiences taught us that anonymity is real humility at work, for it is all-pervading spiritual quality, which today keynotes AA everywhere. Moved by the spirit of anonymity, we are to give up our natural desires for personal publicity as AA members, both among fellow alcoholics and before the general public. And as we lay away, these are very, very human aspirations. We believe that each of us takes part in the weaving of this protective coat, which covers our whole society, in which we may grow and work and live in unity. Because we are sure that humility expressed by anonymity is the greatest safeguard that Alcoholics Anonymous can and will ever have. I want to thank you all for your attendance, and I want to thank you for your attention. And I tell you, y'all have given far more to me than I could ever possibly give to you. And all that I could wish for each and every one of you is only one thing, and that is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety, and never forget one alcoholic talking to another. God bless each and every one. Thank you, and I love you so much. If you'll remain standing, then we'll close this meeting in our usual manner. And those who care to may join hands, and those who care to may recite the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Very good, baby. Really enjoyed the full session.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask you a question. What do you consider prudent and deserving?
Whatever you consider prudent. Whatever you consider. As long...
Well, it's for a large group.
For a large group? Well, it depends on the rent, and it depends on, coffee...